We are inching closer and closer to the primary election here in Connecticut. And of course, then keeping our eyes on what will happen in November for the general election. Joining us to talk anything Connecticut politics is chief political reporter from News 8, Mike Cerulean, a dear friend of mine as well, who joins us back on the show. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I know you're very busy. I saw that News 8 is actually doing a primary election debate tomorrow. You and Dennis House are going to be moderating that between Governor Ned Lamont and State Representative Josh Elliott. How is that race looking from your perspective?
You know, it's hard to predict what we're going to see over the next few weeks because we've just really never seen anything like this before. It's been nearly half a century since the last time a sitting governor faced a primary challenge. So what we're looking at here is two candidates that are pummeling the airwaves right now. I mean, if you turn on a television, it is really difficult to avoid seeing Ned Lamont and Josh Elliott's faces right now.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's intuitive why they're doing that. They're making their arguments. But one of the huge challenges that they're trying to solve for with those advertisements right now is just making people aware that this is happening on August 11th, because, like I said, this really never happens. So people might not be aware of the election. They might not be tuned in. And because of that, because of the unprecedented nature of this, because of the fact that August primary elections typically have lower turnout than, of course, November general elections, it's difficult to predict exactly how many people are going to turn out. It's difficult to model for these things. The public polling we have seen from University of New Hampshire and other sources show the governor with a pretty commanding lead, although over the last several months, the trajectory of that polling has shown Josh Elliott gradually gaining some ground, but still not enough to the point where we would call the polling competitive. I still think the race is one that's very interesting. I wouldn't write off any candidates at this point, but you know, it's really going to be about that awareness, and it's also going to be about the arguments that Josh Elliott makes and that the governor makes, both on the debate stage and on the airwaves over the next few weeks.
So a couple things have been really interesting just in conversations and interactions I've had professionally. First of all, I had State Senator Jason Perlo on recently, who obviously is a Republican for those at home who don't know that. He represents areas including the Valley, Shelton in particular, where he lives, as well as Stratford and other areas nearby. It was interesting because when we were talking about, he had come on to talk about DCF and that report, Mike, about the number of children who have died in DCF custody or with open cases with DCF since 2025. And he said, while I am a Republican, I do believe both Senator Ryan Fazio, who's running as the Republican gubernatorial candidate, and Representative Josh Elliott, who is running to become the Democratic candidate. He said, I feel from both of them, they have more energy and focus on something like broken systems, like state agencies that are just not making the grade compared to our sitting governor. And what I find really surprising is I am feeling this kind of overwhelming from either independent or even some Republican, I'd say, voters, that they would prefer kind of a Ryan versus Josh matchup. Now, I don't know if that's because they feel Ryan is a much stronger candidate, or if it is, in fact, that they feel like Governor Lamont is tired and we need new ideas, fresh blood. I don't know. I don't know, and I don't want to assume, but I feel like that is kind of the energy. And at first, I would think, okay, well, it's because you feel like Ryan would be a no-brainer over Josh Elliott. But I'm starting to feel like that's not really the case. And it's more of I'd rather see two fresh faces bringing fresh ideas who both have legislative experience. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think you can't write off the fact that the Republicans believe that they could have a much easier time beating Josh Elliott
with Ryan Fazio.
Part of it, but
sure.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other. I think about something that Steve Bannon, the former strategist for President Trump, something he said in the wake of the 2016 election is he said that he had hoped that the election would have been Trump versus Sanders, Bernie Sanders, of course, the senator from Vermont, mm-hmm. rather than Trump versus Hillary. And you know, Trump won that election. So, but Bannon's point on that was he said he would have liked to have seen right-wing populism in Donald Trump with protectionism and tariffs and anti-immigration sentiment up against left-wing populism and Bernie Sanders with tax the rich and all of these things. And, you know, I think it's not exactly the same analogy there, but I think there are some people, and I don't want to speak for Senator Perillo, but I think there are some people who would like to see Josh Elliott in a lot of ways does represent that vanguard of the most progressive ideas that are making their way onto the ballot on the Democratic side. Ryan Fossey was a little bit harder to map him onto the national conservative movement right now, but suffice it to say that you would have two new people and new sets of ideas if they were both to be on the ballot, rather than someone that we've seen now three times on a gubernatorial ballot and once in a U.S. Senate ballot.
Well, and I do think, unfortunately, Mike, we have seen, and this is just coming from not even a reporter, let me take that hat off, for example, and just talk as a taxpayer in Connecticut and a mom in Connecticut and just somebody who was born and raised here and would love to stay here. But honestly, it's becoming kind of a joke. It is just so insanely expensive, and it just feels like session after session after session, whether it is healthcare, opportunities that we could explore, but we don't do anything. Bringing down energy costs, which we could explore, but we really don't do anything. I mean, even when you look at just the fraud or the misspending or the amount of audits that come out and show that our agencies are not being run as cleanly as they can be, you get to a point where even on a bipartisan basis, or even those who do not affiliate with a party are saying, is Lamont really the best? Do you stick with the status quo? And I do think we're kind of in that crossroads where it could really give an edge, at least in the primary, to Josh Elliott. Here's my question, though, because I've heard rumors about this, and I know if anybody can kind of sniff out a rumor and see if it's true or not, it's you. Is Governor Lamont potentially going to run as an independent if he loses, or would he back Josh Elliott?
No, he's not going to run as an independent. And I heard a lot of those rumors, too, was and very important on the language here. We use that word independent, and it can mean actually two different things, depending on who you ask. There's running as an independent in the sort of colloquial sense, lowercase I, independent. What that requires is that you petition your way onto the ballot, and typically you basically make your own party. Joe Lieberman had Connecticut for Lieberman. Lowell Weicker had a Connecticut party. There's also running as the independent party's candidate. So folks will be familiar when you go in and vote. Typically in the state Senate and state House races that you're voting in, there will be one candidate who's endorsed by the independent party, and their name will appear on two ballot lines, one of the major parties and then the independent line. There's also the Working Families Party that typically happens as well, where there's a candidate, usually the Democratic candidate, will be the Democratic Party endorsed and Working Families Party endorsed, giving you two ballot lines. And for 99.9% of elections, that's how those what call minor parties work. They're basically supplements for a candidate who is on a major party line. When I started hearing rumors last week that Ned Lamont's campaign was considering seeking the independent party's ballot line, my ears perked up because I thought to myself, well, that's interesting for one, because to the extent that candidates at the legislative level seek the independent party's endorsements, most but not all of them are Republicans. There are Democrats who get the independent party's endorsement. A Democratic gubernatorial candidate, I don't recall the last time one sought or got the independent party endorsement. So that's one element of why it's newsworthy. And the biggest element of why it would have been newsworthy is that if the governor lost the primary and for the Democratic Party, but had the independent party's line, he would still be on the ballot in November. And, of course, that has echoes of what happened to him in 2006 when he won a Democratic primary against mm-hmm. Joe Lieberman.
And then Lieberman,
Joe Lieberman won.
Went
off and, right. And won as a petitioning candidate. I sort of looked into this question. It's very complicated, but this year particularly, the independent party does not have automatic ballot access in the gubernatorial race because the rules say they had a candidate in 2022 that candidate did not get enough votes to keep their ballot line automatically, so that any candidate that wants the independent party line has to gather 7,500 signatures in order to even be considered by the Independent Party for their endorsement. And then once they get it, they would be on the ballot. The Lamont campaign has told me they are not collecting those signatures. They're not pursuing the Independent Party endorsement. And this is the critical part. They say, nor are they pursuing any additional way onto the ballot in November other than the Democratic Party line. So they would love to have the Democratic Party line and the Working Families Party line. But the campaign says they're not going to find like some, they're not going to create, like, you know, the Lamont Party.
Right. They're not going to find an alternate way to get on the ballot if he doesn't win the Democratic primary. I got what you're saying. Yeah. So hold on
and
one second.
Josh Elliott says that as well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We got a few more minutes with Mike Cerulli, chief political reporter for News 8 and a dear friend of mine. I love talking Connecticut politics with this guy. Okay. So, Mike, if I understood you correctly, because I have one more big thing I want to talk about and we have very little time. So if Lamont loses, he's going to back Josh Elliott. If Josh Elliott loses, he's going to back Lamont. That's what you're saying. It sounds like they're not going to seek an independent line on the ballot. They're like, hey, we're trying for the Democratic. If we don't get it, we're going to back the other person. Does that seem to be the case? Do we have Mike Cerulli? Eric, where's Mike? Do we have him? Okay, Mike, are you listening?
I was muted, didn't you?
I knew it. I was like, all right, it's either you or Eric. I should have known it was him, Eric. I'm sorry. I blamed you. I should have. You're right. It was Mike Cerulli. I know. Yeah, no, he put the snooze button on. Okay, so Mike, that's what you're saying,
your
right?
Question, yes, both of them have said they won't find their another way onto the ballot. Lamont has not explicitly said that he's going to back Josh Elliott, though, if Josh Elliott wins.
Interesting. Okay. So then here's my other question, because I was hearing this actually on our midday show on WICC, who I know you know, Lisa Wexler. She was talking about this on her show yesterday, and I was like, oh, thank God Mike's coming on. She was, and I'm totally going to misquote it, Lisa, please don't get mad at me, but I was listening to Lisa talk about the people who have already kind of done early polling of who they would support. The older demographic, here's the cliff notes, the older demographic of Connecticut would still go Lamont. The younger demographic, though, is leaning more towards Ryan Fazio. If Lamont wins the Democratic primary, who wins in November? Obviously, it's based on turnout, right, in November. But it seems like if you split the state 50 plus, we'll just say, 50 and older, they're more leaning towards Lamont. However, if you're in the younger demographic, Gen Z, millennial, they're leaning more towards Fazio. What do you think?
So I haven't looked at polling numbers that reflect that, but that dynamic is certainly true and reflected in polling numbers as it relates to Governor Lamont and Josh Elliott. And it's incredibly drastic. The numbers almost flip in that older 55 and up demographic versus the 30 and under demographic. Mm. It is really striking. And it's not necessarily surprising in the context of a Democratic primary. Is it necessarily shocking in the context of a general election? I really don't know. There's been all of this sort of reporting and scholarship about how younger people now, people in my age range, are more open to Republican candidates than they were maybe 10 or 15 years ago. There was a lot of that commentary after the 2024 presidential election. So I really don't know. And Ryan Fazio is, of course, much closer to our age range than the governor is. But that's not always the determining factor. So I think it's going to be, I need to see a little bit more polling on the general election stuff before I really make an analysis of that. But certainly the dynamic exists and has been explored in other elections, other races, about our young people becoming a bit more open to Republicans.
Well, and I'm wondering if it is also the understanding, because I think this is something that I try to hammer a lot, not because I'm actually not affiliated, never have, never will be affiliated with a party. I've voted both sides of the aisle, just personally, for people who don't know. I think, though, there is a stark difference between a Connecticut Republican and a D.C. Republican or a federal Republican. And I don't know if you feel like young people are picking up on that. The fact that, and I do think that makes a difference versus voting the Republican or the Democratic route. Like, hey, if I vote for a Republican, it means that I'm a MAGA Trump follower. That's actually not necessarily the case. And I don't know if that is what we're seeing when you see younger people saying, hey, what makes more sense? What's actually going to bring our bills down? What's actually going to make me afford to live in Connecticut or even think about after graduation having a family here in Connecticut? Is Fazio the better route forward than Lamont? And is he more in touch than even Lamont? That's what I find really surprising, is not even so much that people are becoming Republicans. It's more of, you know, are we seeing that the Republican Party in Connecticut is different than what maybe the national party's look is? I don't know if you're seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, the Republican Party in Connecticut would certainly say that they are a little bit different from the Republican Party in Washington, which, of course, you know, as represented by President Trump, doesn't really do that well here in Connecticut. I just think also, before you even get into the Republican-Democrat thing, think about the context in which a lot of younger people would even encounter or interact with these candidates. A lot of it's going to be online. If you watch Ryan Fazio's social media videos, it's sometimes difficult to even tell that he is a Republican.
Yeah.
I don't mean that as like a, you know, there are some people who use that term rhino. I don't mean it in that way. I just mean in like, you know, if he was in a primary election with Aaron Stewart right now, which is what we expected to be doing this summer, is covering two
right.
primary elections. You know, all of his social media posts, one would imagine, would have to be about conservative issues, illegal immigration and all of those things. But it's not. He's talking about other stuff, and he's shooting it in an aesthetic that sort of seems like it's a like a student film trying to look like Wes Anderson.
It's
and
true. I agree with you. I think he's very whoever is doing his social media is very smart.
Yeah.
I think whoever is handling his social media is very smart. I agree with you.
He's handling his social media. The principally the two people making his social media posts are a 27-year-old and an 18-year-old. So you know that sort of tracks when you think about the type of people they might be trying to talk to.
Mm. Well, I mean, and look, I mean, not to say that their politics are the same, but I think that was one of the I would say that's who got a lot of credit in this past election presidential was Barron. I was totally blanking on his name, but the, you know, having young people handle the Trump campaign on social media. That was at least at the national level. Am I wrong in saying that? I mean, that was probably one of the biggest takeaways I felt like in Trump's victory was, you know, the way they handled the online presence and who was managing their online presence.
Yeah. And I wrote a bit about that, about how Trump people who get their news from CNN or even from Facebook, like who are a little bit older, they probably didn't even catch on that this is happening in 2024. I wrote about this in the summer of 2024 saying Donald Trump is going and he's doing content with creators and online influencers who, you know, I grew up watching on YouTube and things like that. And these were not political people. These were like prank YouTubers. It's literally prank YouTubers that have grown their platform and through the last few years have come to talk about not necessarily explicitly politics, but cultural issues and things like that. And Trump was on their platforms getting millions and millions of views. And yeah, it was the level to which he was able to trust. And Trump, as someone who was in his late 70s at the time, was able to trust and say, like, whoever's telling me, whether it's Barron Trump, his son, or other young people around him who are saying, you should go talk to these guys. You do have to credit him for being like, yeah, I'll do that.
I'll trust that.
When you consider that Kamala Harris, apparently, I mean, I don't know what the internal deliberations look like, but she never ended up on a lot of those places where young voters are particularly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Speaking to that. Yeah. It'll be interesting for sure. But I always love getting political perspective, obviously, from right here in Connecticut, our Mark Cerulli from News 8, obviously, chief political reporter, and Mike, a very dear friend of mine. Thank you so much for always chatting Connecticut politics. We appreciate it. And we are 3 weeks out from the August primary. We'll see what happens and continue having Mike on the show throughout the summer and leading up to November.